Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, Celeste Headlee here. I'm joined by Todd Zwillick this morning while John is still away. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good morning, Celeste.
The news out of Libya is still a little bit sketchy. We're not really entirely sure what's going on. We've had a weekend of some reportedly massive protests and violent kickback. The death count at this point reportedly is in the hundreds. Rumors that Muammar Gaddafi fled the country, those are denied by officials in the Libyan government. It's also reported, even by Muammar Gaddafi's son, that the city of Benghazi, the second largest city in Libya, is now in the hands of protesters. Helping us kind of sift through the news coming out of Libya this morning is Dirk Vandewalle, professor of government at Dartmouth College, author of A History of Modern Libya and editor of Gaddafi's Revolution. Also joining us, Mohanad Abdulmalik, chairman of Libya Watch, which is a human rights group. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Dirk, let me ask you first. One of the reasons that the rumors about Muammar Gaddafi fleeing the country, one of the reasons that people kind of gave it credence was because last night we saw his son speaking on television and not the General Gaddafi himself. Why was Gaddafi's son speaking?
Well, indeed, that was a very surprising development. Certainly in the past, Gaddafi himself has never passed up an opportunity to speak directly to the Libyans and to the world. And indeed, 3 days ago, we saw him at Green Square in Tripoli parading around. So this was quite surprising. And of course, it hints, at least the way I look at it, at some disarray that has taken place within the top leadership in Libya. There are some rumors that since Saif al-Islam was the one who has been pushing for reforms in Libya, that in a sense he has been blamed for what is going on in Benghazi and Cyrenaica and in general, in the country in general. And so therefore that he was the one that had to bear the brunt and go on television. And in a sense, in a speech very, very uncharacteristic for Saif al-Islam himself, had to defend the regime and tell Libyans that it was either to be for the regime or against the regime, with no alternative in between.
Mohanad Abdulmalik, help me understand the reports, in some cases completely unconfirmed, of the death count. In one case, a witness has called what happened in Benghazi a massacre. How can we get any kind of verifiable information on the number of people who've been injured or killed?
Well, we've been in contact with Benghazi, and we've spoken to doctors in Al Jalah Hospital, and we've spoken to people who have been shot, and we've spoken to ordinary people in their homes. And yes, the brutality of the regime is unbelievable. They actually opened fire on the demonstrators using anti-aircraft guns that are assembled on tanks, and the regime has brought mercenaries from Africa, and these mercenaries are actually shooting using snipers, and the doctors have confirmed to us that the shots, the dead people, were actually shot either in the head or in the chest, which means that they have been targeted to be killed. It is unbelievable.
Dirk Vandewalle, amid this violent crackdown that Mohanad is describing, we've been talking about the importance of the army and who the army sides with in a situation like this could determine the future of the country. Give us a sense of the dynamics of the army inside Libya. Is it prone to tribal divisions, or is it going to be loyal either to Gaddafi or to the anti-government protesters?
Well, the army in Libya is really a kind of a unique institution in Middle Eastern countries. Whereas, for example, in Tunisia and Egypt, you had a professional army with a professional ethic. In Libya, you never really had that. And remember that Gaddafi himself comes out of a military tradition. And so I think one of the things that he was very wary of was a professional army that would be able to be opposition at some point after he took over power in 1969. And so what we have in the army in Libya is what we find throughout much of Libyan society, that is, that there has been a kind of a very careful divide and rule that selectively co-opt certain tribal figures that are then also represented around a different political body around Gaddafi. And so that, in a sense, the army in Libya almost deliberately cannot be counted on by either side. And so it's almost ironic that in trying to create or not create, rather, an organization that could eventually represent some opposition to him, in a sense now Gaddafi has, in a sense, dug his own grave, because now he cannot rely even on a professional army. And by default, he has to rely on a large number of security organizations that he has created, and that seemingly may not be able to contain the kind of political unrest that we've seen in Libya over the last few days.
That's Dirk Vandewaller, professor of government at Dartmouth College. Mohamed Abdulmalek, chairman of Libya Watch, let me ask you, we have had some reports that hired thugs, mercenaries were hired, and that they were they're the people who are actually behind the uprising going on in Libya. Is there any truth to those claims?
Oh, there is. We can confirm that we know of diplomatic movement prior to the uprising, because the what happened after the uprising of the Tunisian people and the Egyptian people was that the opposition and a lot of people inside Libya picked up on choosing the 17th of February as the day when the Libyan people will rise, which gave Gaddafi a lot of time, a huge amount of gas, tear gas has been imported into the country, and also diplomatic movement with African states. So the mercenaries that have been brought in are not just individuals. This is true. This is state invasion, really. There are African states implicated in this. A contract has been also drawn with a flight company, which brought in the mercenaries into Libya. So it is true. There are pictures of these mercenaries being caught and detained to be put on trial later on. There are confirmations, witness confirmation, that these mercenaries speak French. They don't even speak Arabic.
There's no doubt about that. We're going to have to, unfortunately, leave that there. That's Mohamed Abdulmalek, chairman of Libya Watch, which is a human rights group, getting confirmation on at least a few things coming out of Libya. And Dirk Vandewaller joined us yet again, professor of government at Dartmouth College, author of A History of Modern Libya. Thanks to you both.